Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 18 to finish at 17,089. The S&P 500 index up 6 at 2,003. NASDAQ Composite up 22 at 4,580. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 1 basis point at 2.34%. Oil up $1.30 at $95.85 per barrel. Gold down $2 at $1,288.20 per ounce. Silver down 2 cents at $19.56. The S&P 500 set another record high close, 32nd of the year. The S&P 500 gained 3.8% for the month, representing the benchmark indices' best August performance since 2000. The S&P 500 also achieved its largest monthly percentage jump since February, back when we were up 4.3%. The Dow and S&P have posted gains for 4 weeks in a row. For the week, the S&P 500 tacked on nearly 0.8%. The Dow scored advances of 0.6% for the week and 3.2% for the month, while the NASDAQ climbed 0.9% for the week and 4.8% for August. Now, don't forget that August saw rates on the 100-year Treasury note drop from 2.55% to 2.34%, and oil prices had dropped from $98.15 a barrel to $95.85. It's always tricky to say, this time it's different, but it is. Remember back in 2000, the NASDAQ was trading right about where it is right now, but back then, people were quitting their day jobs to become day traders. The market was irrationally exuberant, not so much anymore. People are skeptical. They don't trust the market. They don't trust the rally. And distrust is healthy, at least for investors. The Commerce Department reported this morning that consumer spending fell 0.1% in July, down 0.02% inflation adjusted, compared to a gain of 0.4% in June. Spending was weighed down in part by a decline in automobile purchases and a weather-related drop in demand for utilities. Consumer prices rose modestly in July, a sign inflation remains in check as the Fed winds down its bond-buying program. The price index for personal consumption expenditures, PCE, the Fed's preferred inflation measure, increased 1.6% in July from a year earlier. Excluding food and energy, prices climbed 1.5% year over year for all those people who don't eat or drive. The Thomson Reuters University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index increased to 82.5 in August, highest level since July 2007, up from 81.8 in July. So consumers are confident, but not so confident that we will increase spending, apparently. This morning, the UK raised its terror threat level from substantial to severe. The next level is critical, followed by duck and cover. Thankfully, the British are wise enough to avoid a color-coded terror threat level. The new alert level rates the risk of an attack on the UK highly likely, although they say there was no evidence to suggest an attack was imminent. Prime Minister David Cameron held a press conference to talk about the threat posed by ISIS, or IS, or ISIL, or whatever you want to call them. He did not give extensive details on what the changed threat level would mean, stressing people should continue to go about our lives in the normal way. Kurdish Peshmerga forces say they have retaken oil fields near Mosul in northern Iraq from the ISIS militants. The area is part of a large swath of territory in northern Iraq overrun by ISIS in recent weeks. Iraqi and Kurdish forces backed by U.S. airstrikes have regained some ground, including the vital Mosul Dam. Germany's foreign minister, Frank Steinmeier, says the crisis in eastern Ukraine is slipping out of control. His statements were echoed by various other European foreign ministers. Russia could face new restrictions after a summit of the European Union's 28 heads of state in Brussels on Saturday. The EU and the U.S. have already imposed sanctions against dozens of senior Russian officials, separatist commanders, and Russian firms accused of undermining Ukrainian sovereignty. In late July, the EU also blacklisted some key economic sectors, prompting Russia to retaliate by banning food imports. Clearly, this is not having the desired deterrent effect, despite the fact that the Russian economy is suffering. The Russian ruble dropped to its lowest level in 16 years. Meanwhile, the U.S. has imposed new sanctions on 25 companies and individuals suspected of helping Iran's nuclear program, or suspected of evading previous sanctions or supporting terrorism. India's economy grew 5.7% in the 3 months that ended in June, compared to the same period a year ago, its fastest pace in 2.5 years. The economy was helped by strong growth in electricity, gas, and water supply and financial services. Brazil has fallen into recession. Economic output, GDP, fell by 0.6% in the 3 months to June, and revised figures for the first quarter of the year also showed a fall of 0.2%. The data showed that civil construction, manufacturing, and investment especially suffered during the second quarter. Brazil holds general elections in about a month. The economic news is not good for the incumbents. In the fourth quarter of its fiscal year 2014, the city of Detroit projected it would bring in about $55 million in property taxes. Instead, it collected just $6.7 million, about $48 million short of what it expected. The city revealed the shortfall in its most recent filing with the Michigan Department of Treasury by emergency manager Kevin Orr. The hack attack on J.P. Morgan Chase went on for 3 months before they finally figured out something was wrong. The cyber attack started in June, continued until just mid-August. In April, J.P. Morgan said it would spend about $250 million a year on cybersecurity. J.P. Morgan becomes the latest victim in a rash of digital assaults, including the theft of 40 million payment card numbers from Target, denial-of-service attacks against Bank of America, PNC Financial Services Group, and some other lenders. Though the J.P. Morgan breach did not disrupt the broader financial system, it doesn't instill much confidence. Even if customers don't lose money from a hacking assault on J.P. Morgan, the episode is a reminder that banks with the most sophisticated defenses are vulnerable. Treasury Department officials have reportedly told bank insurers that in the event of a cataclysmic cyber attack, they would activate a government backstop that doesn't explicitly cover electronic intrusions. A worst-case event that destroyed records, drained accounts, and froze networks could hurt the economy along the scale of a 9/11 terrorist attack. Federal deposit insurance would apply only if a bank failed, not if hackers drained accounts. The banks would have to tap their reserves and then their private insurance, which wouldn't be enough to cover all claims from a catastrophic event. Discussions about the government's role in cleaning up after a catastrophic cyber assault have centered on the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act, or TRIA. The insurance law, enacted after the 2001 attacks, authorizes the government to provide financial support for insurance companies in the wake of terrorism. It's up for renewal this year. Bottom line is that if a cyber attack destroys the financial system, you're probably on the hook. The United States is crazy about guns. Coming off a record year of sales, the gun market, though, is cooling. In the last quarter, Smith & Wesson sales dropped 23% to about $131 million. Profit plunged 45% to $14 million. Sturm Ruger had similarly weak numbers at the end of July. Sales for Sturm dropped 13% to $153 million in the latest quarter. Seems we've reached peak gun, which raises the question of why Americans purchased so many guns. The simple answer is fear, fear of crime associated with the economic meltdown, fear of a Greek-style debt collapse, fear that the government would take away guns. Somehow, though, we have avoided the apocalypse, and so now gun sales are down. Still, a terrifying jihadist group is conquering and butchering its way across big swaths of Iraq and Syria. Planes are falling out of the sky on what seems like a weekly basis. Civilians were killed in massive numbers in the Israeli-Gaza conflict. Or was that Chicago? Others are falling prey to Ebola in West Africa. The world, in short, is falling apart. That's how it feels, at least, to those of us who sit at a blessed remove from the death and destruction, but who are watching every bloody moment on cable news or social media. It can be hard sometimes not to see media coverage as an unrelenting flow of negativity. It raises an important question. In an age when we can mainline bad news 24/7 if we so choose, what's the psychological impact of all this exposure to tragedy at a distance? Turns out some people have studied that. It won't give you PTSD, anxiety, or depression if you weren't predisposed toward those conditions. However, cognitive shortcuts triggered by the news can also lead us to gradually see the world as a darker and darker place, chipping away at certain optimistic tendencies. All things being equal, if you ask people, regardless of their circumstances, to evaluate what's going on around them, do you think your neighbors are good people? Do you think the local schools are solid? People almost always say yes in their immediate setting. Zoom out a little, though. People have less to go on. As soon as you get out of your zone, most of your information is from the news. And the news, by definition, covers extreme things. And while, as has eternally been the case, there are certain pockets of the planet that are really getting worse on a daily basis, on a broader level, there's solid evidence that the world is in the midst of a decades-long trend of actually becoming better, safer, healthier, more humane. We just have the bad stuff shouted into our ears louder than ever before. How can we fight back against the unnecessary coarsening of our outlook that may be occurring every time we glance at one of our gadgets? Well, the simplest technique is to just turn it off and to try to consciously focus on the good things around you. And so I hope you have a happy and safe Labor Day weekend. Follow along, moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.